love God and do what you like. Now, those are bold words, but they're not my own. They come from a sermon that St. Augustine preached. He was speaking from 1 John chapter 4, that great passage, that John's letter about love. Augustine was the Bishop of Hippo, which is in today's Algeria. He was a North African bishop around about the 4th or 5th century, and is probably one of the most influential theologians, philosophers, certainly in the first 1,000 years of the church's history. But what does it mean? And the reason that I raise it is because love God and do what you like sort of hits you in the face. But if you love God, genuinely love God, then it moderates the rest of the sentence. I found this quote early on in my ministry, and on the one Sunday morning, I got up and there was the time of worship and readings, and I stood to preach, and I just quoted that. I said, love God and do what you like. Closed my Bible and I left the building. Now you can imagine the impact that that had. But everybody after that knew the quote, love God and do what you like. The question of love is basic, and it needs for us sometimes to be reminded over and over again of it. What's interesting is that in Mark chapter 12, when the man comes to Jesus and said, he wants to pose him a question, and he says, what is the most important commandment? What's the greatest commandment? And Jesus, without hesitation, says, the first commandment is, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and your soul and your mind and your strength. And the second one is like it. It says, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Now, if you've been around the church at any time at all, you've heard that spoken about. When Jesus is pressed, he says, loving God and loving your neighbor is the primary issue. That is the issue that we face. Paul later on in Corinthians, and I'll quote Paul later on again as well, but in 1 Corinthians 13, at the end of the chapter, he says, it's a chapter that we know as the chapter of love, and ad nauseum, this passage is read at weddings. And I think in some ways it's become trivialized, but it ends off with, now these remain, faith, hope and love, these three. But the greatest of these is love. We need to be reminded that heart, soul, mind and strength is to be given in loving God. And if nothing else out of today, that's a question we need to ask ourselves over again. Am I loving God with my heart, my soul, my mind and my strength? Whatever that might look like for you. And it's a thing that we have to come back to over and over again, to sift through our own lives, our motivations, our impulses, and to say, am I loving God in that kind of way? Is love the heart, the core of who I am? I was reminded this week, as I was reading something completely different, of St. Thérèse of Lisieux. Now, let me just tell you a little bit about her to begin with, because it puts this whole thing in context. She lived in the 19th century. She died when she was only 24, in 1897. She died of TB. And she was canonized quite quickly in the Catholic Church. In other words, she became a saint really quickly as a 24-year-old. She was a Carmelite nun. Most of her sisters who survived childhood ended up also as nuns. And her big thing was the simplicity of life. And she's one of the most popular saints in the whole of Catholic history. Completely obscure, virtually, in her own lifetime. Often sick. And she was declared, and this is interesting, because she was declared a doctor of the church. Now, just to give you some context, in the whole of church history, there are 38 men and women who have been declared doctors of the church, people who have made significant contributions to the teaching, the theology, the life of the church in that way. 34 of them are men, 4 of them only are women. Teresa of Avila, Catherine of Siena, Hildegard of Bingen, and Saint Therese of Lisieux, this 24-year-old. Now, the reason for telling you all this, it gives you a context in terms of what comes next. She wrote at her sister's request. Her sister ended up being the head of the order that she was part of. She wrote The Story of a Soul, which is, in a sense, kind of an autobiography. And in it is what's described as her little way. Now, there's lots talked about the little way of St. Therese of Lisieux. She only mentions that a couple of times in the book. But what she comes to at a point, and this is really interesting, because she comes to a crisis of vocation, of what am I here for? What is the purpose of my life? What am I supposed to do? What am I contributing? What is the meaning of all this? And if you read her history, her life, even when she was 9, she wanted to become a nun. When she was really still a teenager, early teens, her father took her on a pilgrimage to see the Pope, and she begged the Pope to let her become a nun. She wanted to be a warrior, a priest, a doctor, apostle, a martyr, missionary, anything that she could be great for God. But she was, number one, really sickly. As I said to you earlier, she died of TB when she was just 24 and was pretty sickly most of her life. And secondly, she recognized that she had limited talents and abilities. In other words, she felt quite ordinary. And that's why this is interesting, is that we tend to put people up on pedestals. And we look at Augustine as a saint, as a doctor of the church. He's monumental. I mean, he changes the shape of Western thinking and philosophy and theology for decades, centuries, even a millennium and more to come. He is monolithic. But here you have a young woman of 24 who's declared a saint, who's made a doctor of the church, who is just ordinary, nothing spectacular, just passionately serving God. At one point she says, she asks a question of God. She says, is there a soul more little, more powerless than mine? I feel insignificant. I feel like I can't do anything. As a nun, she was cloistered away. She was just praying. What was she doing? Then one day she has a revelation, and it comes to her, Paul in chapter 12 of 1 Corinthians is speaking about the body of Christ. And he's talking in that context of what it means to be the body and how the body looks and the church as the body, and that we're made up of different parts, and the ear and the eye and the hand and so on. I'm not going to go into all that detail now, but essentially what he was saying in chapter 12 of 1 Corinthians is that this body of Christ, the church, is made up of a multitude of different people with different gifts and talents, different abilities, different ministries. We can't all be apostles. We can't all be prophets. We can't all be teachers, but we, each one of us, have a function that is essential. The church has many members, but it's one body, and each has a part to play in the functioning of the whole. Now we know that. But then when Therese was reading this, she moved on to chapter 13, and she realized that the whole first section of chapter 13 is that it doesn't matter how talented and gifted you are. If I have the gift of prophecy and know all mysteries and all knowledge, but I have all the faith, I can remove mountains, but have love, no love. I am nothing. If I give up all my possessions to feed the poor and my body to be burned, but if I don't have love, there's no profit in that at all. And so she grasps the fact that at the core of all this, love is that, he goes on to say in 1 Corinthians 13, and ends up by saying, the greatest of all these things between faith, hope, and love is love. And suddenly her eyes are opened. And she says, this is the most excellent way. This is the perfect gift. If there's no love, there is nothing anyway. Love is the excellent way. The key to her vocation, she found, was loving. No matter what you do, where you are, who you are, what day job you have, what kind of background or history, what part you play in your society or in your church, all of that is done with love. Then you have found your vocation. Your vocation is to do all that you do, everything your hand finds to do, do it not only with all your might, but do it with a passionate heart of love. Your purpose in life, my purpose in life, is to love. And I quote here, she says, yes, I found my place in the church. I shall be love. Yes, I have found my place in life. Yes, I have found my place wherever I am, whoever I am. I shall be love. Now, the question is simple. The podcast is called So What? I'm saying, so what? So what does this mean for you? What does it mean for me? That I shall be love. What is so important about love that it makes it essential, makes it central? What does it look like? What is my part to play in this world? Loving the Lord my God with all my heart and soul and mind and strength. I shall be love. I'm going to read a passage from the Message. I really do love this bit, the way that Eugene Peterson translates Colossians 3, verse 12 to 14. So chosen by God for this new life of love, dress in the wardrobe God picked out for you. It's such a big, a vivid image. Dress in the wardrobe God picked out for you. Compassion, kindness, humility, quiet strength, discipline. Be even-tempered, content with second place, quick to forgive an offense. Forgive as quickly and as completely as the Master forgave you. And regardless of what else you put on, wear love. It's your basic all-purpose garment. Never be without it. So what? So what is your place in God's economy? What is your vocation? Is it the same as Teresa? I shall be love. And then makes sense of Augustine's quote, love God and do what you like.